You're listening to the Chances Report on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Dave Edwards, and back in the studio with the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Mike Lovell. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Dave.
So we have a lot to talk about. We'll talk about commencement. We'll talk about a lot of other things, but of course we cannot ignore what has been in the headlines for the last several weeks, and that is the state budget update as it pertains to the university. I think we all know that UW system is going to be dealing with a rather unique situation, going from a budget which proposed an increase in funding to now a proposed cut in funding. And of course, we're taping this program a little bit ahead of time, so a few things may change. But Mike, what is going on, and how does this now cut impact UW Milwaukee?
Well, obviously, this is unprecedented. We had all been planning from when the governor first introduced the budget, if not even before. You know, we've been hearing that the budget was going to be kind to the UW system for the first time in literally 30 years. And so we were not worrying about how we're going to deal with any budget cuts. And the fact that we've gone from $181 million investment to now not only taking the whole $181 million off the table, but another $2 million in addition to that, to having a cut for the first time. And I think it's also important to remember that $181 million had two things in it that really are important. The first is the fact that our cost to continue, our increases in health care benefits for our employees, our leases and things like that, that was in the $181 million. So those are funds that we still have to pay no matter what. So it's like a base budget cut. In addition to that, it also included the pay plan for our employees. And so we're really not sure what's going to happen with the pay plan, whether the state is going to expect us to find other funds to do that, or whether we'll be part of the general state pay plan, what we've heard to be around 1% each year, the biennium for state employees.
So we talked a little bit about this last month, and it seems like the conversation escalated since you and I last had the conversation. Because on our last month's program, you were explaining why, in fact, the money that UWM held in what was being called everything from a surplus to a slush fund to a cash balance was primarily money that you had already anticipated spending on projects that the regents had already approved. So the legislature obviously has not bought that argument, or at least the members of Joint Finance did not buy that argument. And now by cutting this money, does that put those projects in jeopardy?
I would say it does not put those projects in jeopardy, but it creates a significant challenge for us as a campus on how we're going to move forward. Again, I said, as I mentioned earlier, essentially what the budget has given us now is a base budget decrease, which means, you know, we now have a structural deficit in our budget. And the one-time money for these projects we still have. So the surplus, that money is set aside going forward, but it's the recurring cost every year for the money now that we have for things like the benefits our employees that are going to continue to rise each year that we no longer have the money for that have been put out there. So it creates real challenges, because now until we can get new revenue streams in, I'm really concerned about how we are going to continue as a campus to do the services that we now provide.
So have you been thinking about that? Obviously, those roll-up costs will be there whether or not you want them to be there or not. So what do you do?
Well, so this is the challenge is – again, this is unprecedented, because we've never heard so late in the year of the budget that we are actually facing a budget cut. And so we've not had any conversations because we weren't planning on it. And so now, you can imagine now being the summer, the faculty are gone. We have to now start discussions about how we're going to handle the budget that's coming down the line going into June, when it's going to be implemented July 1st. And we've not had any opportunity even, this just came out late last week. And so I don't have any answers yet. I've certainly thought about a lot over the weekend, the holiday weekend, and how we're going to do this. But really, we really face a daunting task of figuring out how we're going to handle, the decreased revenue. Because don't forget, there's still a 0% tuition for the next 2 years as well. And again, in our projections, we conservatively put in a 3% tuition increase for those 2 years. So again, there's less money than we were counting on there as well, because tuition had gone up 5.5% the last year. So conservatively, we put it in our budget and we were doing our planning at 3%. So not only do we not have the $181 million, we don't have the money for the tuition either, which when you add all those things up, we're talking about $8 to $10 million of money that we need to figure out where we're going to come up with that we don't have right now.
So does that mean there's a potential that that you won't be able to admit all the students that you had been talking to, or that your admissions office has been talking to? Does that mean faculty will be laid off?
No, I think the answer to both of those are no. But I don't have an answer of, you know, are we going to offer less core sections? There may be not a possibility of that. We have to look at other commitments that we have and other investments. It's really going to be a challenge. Again, we're too early in the game for me to have exact answers of what we're going to do, because I think that's a campus conversation that we want to collectively determine how to best handle these. But certainly to happen so late, you know, really puts us in a, you know, it puts us behind the eight ball.
So you're obviously the chancellor of one campus. Are you getting any direction or guidance from UW system? Are you talking to your colleagues about what's in play?
Well, I mean, every campus is different. We've made that discussion before, but you know, there are some campuses that are probably a little better positioned than we are, you know, because they don't have these commitments going forward that we have with the two new schools and colleges and the building projects that the state, you know, has asked us to move forward on. So it's probably a little bit easier for them, but there's other campuses, you know, I mentioned before that UW-Superior has a negative balance. UW-Stout, their CFI, which is their financial index on their health of their campus, they were already below the critical 1.0 level before these cuts were made. And so they have challenges of making sure that they're worried about their accreditation, you know, at their campus. So again, I think that all the chancellors, you know, again, we had a meeting a week ago last Friday. We'll be meeting again, you know, obviously at the Regents meeting and trying to talk with each other about how we're all going to try to best handle these on our campuses and get some ideas about best practices.
Put yourself, though, in the role of a parent or an incoming student or someone not connected with the university. You know, you hear these reports about how the university is amassing all this money, not only at the campus but at the system level, while you're still consistently asking for tuition increases. Can you see how a person not affiliated with your kind of position could simply say, yeah, why are they asking for these tuition increases? This just isn't right.
Yeah. No, certainly. And it all goes back to the fact that, I mean, look at the federal and state investment into higher education continue to go back. And again, every year, the levels are getting lower and lower. And so our costs are not going up. Our costs to run the campuses, we've actually held them constant. But the fact that we have less funding, you know, from the government, really, we have to fill the hole somewhere. Unfortunately, it falls on the burden of the families, you know, of the state of Wisconsin and the students. And it's just the way that higher ed is moving, you know, in the future. And one of the things that, again, it's real frustrating for us is, you know, what they've talked about even with this current budget is the fact that, you know, they took away our $181 million investment, and they're going to move a good portion of that to the K-12 system because we weren't good stewards of the state's money because we had this $1 billion surplus. Well, I've heard the most recent estimates on K-12, their carry forward surplus is $3.5 billion. You know, and no one's saying that they're being bad stewards of the state's money, you know, but still with us, we've been told that. And so it's kind of it's an interesting dynamic that's going on.
Well, speaking about dynamics, State Senator Jennifer Schilling of La Crosse was quoted as saying, you know, I feel like we're sitting here at a legislative intervention with the UW system. I mean, you know, the regents have always had a fair degree of latitude to operate the university system, had sought even more latitude. And so does this feel like an intervention?
In some respects, yes. You know, we really feel that we're getting a lot of scrutiny. And I think there's a lot of information out there. And I think that if people were adequately informed, you know, they would obviously feel a little bit differently than the way this has been kind of rolled out in the media and the public perception might be.
Mm-hmm. So chapter two of this story is sort of the second leg of this, and that is the governor putting forth a proposal that would allow the sale of UW buildings without the permission of the regents and presumably without a discussion of the individual campuses. So, you know, and there's been all sorts of discussions about what that means. Shel Lubar from Milwaukee has spoken out about how that could impact fundraising. What's your take on that?
Well, I think, you know, it's a little bit scary. I think this originally came about because the power plants, the campuses all have power plants that operate, and there was some idea that it might save the state some money to actually have a private group come in and run the power plants for the campuses, because it's pretty clear that the power plants on the campuses constantly need infrastructure upgrades. It's expensive. Campuses, this UW system may not be the best at running these big systems. And so that's kind of where this, you know, led us into, I think, led the governor down the path of putting this into the budget. But then when they left the framework of being open to being any of the state buildings, you know, that's where I think it became a little bit concerning, you know, for the campuses, because as you know, one of the things we try to raise money for on our campuses, you know, are, you know, capital projects. And mm-hmm. the fact that the state could come in and, you know, privatize a dormitory or privatize a parking garage or privatize another state building, you know, is concerning. And it's ultimately concerning because the proceeds of any sale of any of our buildings would not go to the campuses. They'd go back to the state, you know, to relieve debt and other things. And so, you know, we worry that if one of our campus buildings got sold, that it might actually cost us more in the long run, you know, to pay rent or do whatever we would do to the private entity that would be running the facility.
Mm-hmm. So there's been discussion that, you know, there are some high-profile facilities, most notably in Madison, you know, the Kohl Center and others would not be eligible for this kind of sale. But how does this impact UWM? In recent years, you've done a lot more fundraising mm-hmm. for buildings than probably was the case 10, 20 years
yeah.
ago.
We would have very few, if any, buildings that would be exempt from this, because I think if 50% of the funds to build the buildings were raised, then they would be exempt of this process. Well, I don't think we have any of our campus buildings that hit that level of 50%. If we do, it's not many. So, it really doesn't impact us. And again, it does impact the ideas if, you know, we were asking somebody to put their name on a building and they think that the state may actually sell that building, you know, they're not going to be liable to give money for it.
Mm-hmm. What reaction are you getting in the community? We'll talk in a few minutes about commencement. You were talking to, obviously, students and graduates and parents and things like that. What are you hearing?
Well, I think that in general, I think that first going back to the tuition, I think that everyone is pleased with the fact that there is a tuition freeze. And, you know, I can understand that with all the years of the increases. But I do think that when we do sit down and explain to them, you know, what we're facing, I do think people understand that the current situation may cause a big problem, you know, 2 years from now or 4 years from now, when suddenly, you know, the state has to raise more money for higher ed and there's not going to be a lot of GPR funds. And I'm worried that there's going to be a huge tuition increase 2 or 4 years from now to make up, you know, for what was put as zero. And I think that's a conversation, you know, that we talk about, that ultimately, you know, we have to pay for the costs, you know, of higher education in the state. And by holding things zero now, are we setting ourselves up for a huge increase in the future?
Well, are you willing to speculate? I mean, if that, let's say, scenario plays out over the next couple of years and there is a dramatic need for new general purpose revenue to sustain the operation and the legislature is still of the same mind, I mean, what do you think about the future, the long-term future of the university, given the current political climate today?
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, I don't have a crystal ball, but I'm very concerned about, you know, higher ed in the state of Wisconsin. I'm very concerned about particularly our campus with our current commitments and knowing kind of what the ideas have been about, you know, how you handle the budgets for the universities the past, you know, 2 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a deep breath and slightly change the subject. In case you joined us late, you're listening to the Chances Report on WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, and I'm speaking with, as you probably imagine, Mike Lovell, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I suspect that a month from now, when you come back on the radio, we'll have even more to talk about, because you'll have to be making a lot of decisions as the new fiscal year begins. But for now, at least, let's think back to the most recent commencement. Obviously, always a very big event, and you kept very busy, shaking a lot of hands and congratulating a lot of people.
Yeah, it was great. We had about 3,500 students graduate this May. We had two great ceremonies, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, where we had you know, more than 15,000 people attend. So it was really exciting for our campus. And again, it's just there's nothing more powerful than to give out degrees to the students. To me, it's the best time of the year.
Mm-hmm. So you graduated almost 3,500 students. And I always find it interesting to look at where these students come from. Obviously, there is a strong push of students in all of the degree programs from Wisconsin, but that percentage of non-Wisconsin students also continues to increase.
Yes, and again, we now have, I've mentioned before, we have students from every state in the country and from 84 countries around the world. And so we continue to graduate students from, I think it was this year, was 38 different countries, I think it was mentioned. Mm. That was exciting for us. But yeah, those numbers, again, we're going to continue to grow the populations, you know, of those students on our campus, because you and I have talked before about the demographics of the state of Wisconsin, that we're going to continue for three or four more years to have less high school graduates in the state. So we need to find, if we want to maintain our enrollments, need to find more out-of-state and international students.
I was struck by the number, though, that 50% of doctoral graduates were non-Wisconsin students.
Yeah.
Is that an unusual number
for
doctoral programs?
No, that's pretty typical for us and for other research universities across the United States, because when you understand in the STEM disciplines in particular, there are a lot of international students. There's more international students than U.S. students in those programs. But even so, when you get to the PhD level, students tend to go where the programs are the strongest, and so they'll easily cross boundaries of states, to go to the doctoral programs that fit their needs.
Mm-hmm. And I also was looking at the breakdown of what schools the graduates come from. And you would think in this day and age that you'd have a lot of students graduating with business degrees and very few in education. But really, they really kind of run the gamut from all the different schools.
Yeah. No, it's obviously all the arts and science always has the most graduates, because it has the most diverse programs. But, business, education, the Peck School of Health Sciences, the Bader School Engineering Applied Science, all had 200 to 300 graduates. So we had just a real nice mix.
And the honorary degrees that were granted this year?
Oh, yeah. We were so fortunate to give out some great honorary degrees. John Goethe, who really is, known as Milwaukee's historian, with his Making of Milwaukee, both the book and his TV series that he ran, was the morning honorary degree. And in the afternoon, we were able to give out degrees to Marianne Lubar and Bud Selig. And as it turned out, they were very close friends. And so it was really neat to see them get their degrees together.
Yeah. And obviously, people know something about Bud Selig, of course, commissioner of baseball. But maybe not everyone knows that much about Marianne Lubar.
Yeah. Marianne Lubar is obviously married to Shel Lubar. But she's just been an outstanding contributor to the city and to the region in our university. For her arts and cultural, she's a real champion and philanthropist of really helping, whether go from the Jewish Museum to the Art Museum, and just really has been a leader in helping the community.
Yeah. And of course, Bud Selig, everyone knows a fair amount about Bud. But he also received a UWM baseball team jersey.
Yeah,
little touch.
That was really exciting. And he as it turned out, not very long ago, I was in his office and he was showing me all his memorabilia. And the two things he was most proud of was his Jackie Robinson collection and his Joe DiMaggio. Joe DiMaggio happened to be his favorite player growing up. But the Jackie Robinson collection, just coming off the movie 42, it became very clear that when we were planning on giving him a jersey and retiring that jersey, that 42 was probably the one that we should give him, and we presented it to him. He was very surprised and very thankful, and he told me that he's going to frame it in his office and put it right next to all his other Jackie Robinson things.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's great. You were – obviously, commencement is always a very busy day for chancellors and for many people on the university campus, but you accepted a very special invitation for a little early morning run.
Yes. So this was really a neat experience for me. We had one of our graduates, Patrick Leon, was a first sergeant who had done two tours in Iraq and a tour in Afghanistan, and it took him 7.5 years to graduate because of his different commitments that he had with the military. And he emailed me and said, listen, he talked about his mother had just had a long battle with cancer and had survived. And she had just done a walk, a 5K walk, and it was kind of motivating for him. And he had small children. And he really wanted to start the day at the War Memorial and run to Spades Plaza, you know, in the morning before commencement. And he asked me to come. And I don't think he expected to hear back from me, but, you know, I run every day. And somebody asked me for a run, I can't say no, especially in a case like this where we were really honoring him and his commitments. And he was a really neat story because he never graduated high school. He was a high school dropout, you know, entered the military. And really, you know, the military helped change his life. And when he was in the military, he realized he wanted to go for a degree. And so, you know, the journey he took, you know, was not easy. You know, he had two small kids. He's got Joseph and Noah, three-year-old and 18-month-old that I got to meet, you know, and as we ran from the War Memorial to Spades Plaza, he also arranged for the ROTC to meet us at the corner of Lake Drive and in Kenwood, and we carried flags. He carried the U.S. flag, and I carried the UWM flag into campus and up to Spades Plaza, and his wife, his two young children and his mother were waiting for us. Mother came in from Montana. And it was really just a special, you know, I'll never forget it. It was really honoring him and what he had done. And, you know, I felt, you know, it was a very special way to start the morning for me.
Yeah. You know, I would imagine that as you talk to a lot of the families of graduates and the students themselves, at commencement, they have a lot of hope. They have a lot of dreams. They have a lot of plans and a lot of optimism. But I know you also recently got to meet a couple of graduates who have already sort of, they're already living their dream.
Yeah. It's just amazing, you know, and one of the neat things I get to do is when I go see our alumni, you know, across the country, you know, it's just amazing to see how successful some of them are. We recently went to New York City and visited a couple of alumni and met a husband and wife, Betsy and Brett Lennart. And Brett was a School of Architecture and Planning a graduate, and Betsy was a social welfare graduate, and both of them have just been so successful, and they both graduated, I think, in the 2005-2006 timeframe. So they're still in their 20s, or if maybe Brett might have turned 30. But Betsy, for example, you know, she took her social welfare degree, and she went and started something called Fab.com. It's a web-based retail sales. It's a boutique kind of specialized. And she was one of the first six founding members of the company about a year and a half ago. Fast forward to today, they have 600 employees all over the world. They have done $1 billion in sales.
Wow.
And she talks about how she used her social welfare degree and caring about people to design the website with the customer in mind. You know, she used that experience, which was really a unique thing for me to hear. And Brett, on the other hand, he was a School of Architecture and Planning graduate. You know, he graduated, started working out for Flat Architects in Madison, then ended up going out to spinning out into San Francisco for a couple of years with a startup from there, and then decided to go to New York City. And he started his own company. He was in graduate school, got his master's in architecture, and decided that he and 10 other individuals were going to start kind of this real estate firm where they went in and they would buy properties, fix them up, and then sell them back. And it just so happened that last year he was explaining to me that he had sold they bought more property in New York City than anyone else last year. You know, and these are two of our young alumni. They're just doing fantastic. They joked around and talked about how they leave in the morning and they come home at 10 o'clock at night and give each other high fives. but they are just remarkable. And it was really great getting to know them.
Yeah, that's great. So from New York to Waukesha, I know you were a featured speaker at an event of the Waukesha County Business Alliance and kind of bridging the partnership between Milwaukee County and Waukesha County.
Yeah, and one of the big challenges that Waukesha County faces is, you know, they are growing. They have a lot of opportunities, and they need talent. They're looking for our business graduates, engineering graduates, and other graduates, and they really want to help develop a pipeline, you know, of interns and students that address some of the needs that Waukesha is facing as they grow and their businesses grow, and actually look at educational opportunities as well. They also want to, you know, further educate their population, particularly in giving you know, business and other technical degrees.
Mm-hmm. So you're I guess are talking about furthering the collaborative spirit between the Waukesha County organizations and the College of Engineering at UW.
Yeah, as an example, you know, one of the things that we have very close ties with them, with GE Healthcare. You know, they've invested about $3.5 million in a partnership around computational imaging. We also do an Edison Fellows program where we actually give their current employees, they recruit high-end talent from across the country, and they put them in a program called Edison Fellows, where through their work, you know, they get a degree, you know, a master's degree from UWM. Same with the Lubar School of Business. You know, we have over 50-plus Waukesha County employees hired our students in full-time positions just last year alone, and we have 40-plus internship companies doing internships, and we're trying to expand those and really create more synergy and really try to help the businesses there.
Mm-hmm. The Energy Achievement Center Research Lab and Showcase in the UWM Engineering and Math Sciences Building recently were recognized with two big awards.
Yeah, and this was really exciting for us. And talking about our partnership with Johnson Controls, as we've talked before, this is, in my opinion, has been the deepest partnership and one that I'm most proud of that's in my career between a university and a corporate member. And the showcase facility, the labs that we've built and the partnership we developed won an Edison Gold Award. And the Edison Awards are often called the Oscars of Innovation for the U.S. This was a national award. We won the gold prize for this, it being the top partnership in the country. And it's just, you know, it's just really exciting for us to recognize. And we also locally won the Eureka Award, which is given out by the Business Journal for the same partnership that we developed. And it just shows that, you know, that when you work together, you know, we become nationally recognized. And I mentioned before, through this partnership, we've actually brought in over the last year $35 million in federal grants with a 92% success rate, which is just unprecedented. And it takes attention. I've been asked to talk about the partnership, you know, across the country with my colleagues in other universities because it's so unique and strong.
Mm-hmm. And finally, as we kind of track your comings and goings, you also, I know, spoke at the University Club at a Scale Up Milwaukee launch event. What is Scale Up Milwaukee?
Well, Scale Up Milwaukee is really, it's an action, it's a research focus to truly develop an innovative ecosystem here in Milwaukee, you know, around innovation entrepreneurship. And the idea is there's really a lot of good programs, you know, across the city, you know, addressing innovation entrepreneurship, but they have not been coalesced to all of us work together. And by doing, if we can all start working together, really generate the power of doing this. And we brought in Dan Eisenberg, who's really the founding executive director of Babson Entrepreneurship Ecosystem Projects. He's worked with other cities around the world, you know, in places like Colombia, Brazil, Denmark, and really fostering, you know, policies and structures that will stimulate long-term economic growth by getting, you know, the innovation systems working together. And we're very excited because this project is being funded by American Express, and this is the first project of its kind that American Express is funding in the U.S., and they chose Milwaukee. And likewise, Dan Eisenberg has never done a city in the U.S. He's always focused on international cities, and he chose Milwaukee as his first city. So obviously, both American Express and Dan Eisenberg see something special that's happening here in Milwaukee, and I would agree that we are really on the verge. We've talked before about some of the activities that are going on, that Milwaukee is in the process of being ready to take off, and, you know, I think that the innovations are going to really start coming in the next year or two.
Yeah, you mentioned this a few months ago on the program. So UWM will continue to be kind of a part of this organization and bolstering the move forward.
Yeah, we are one of the drivers. I was one who brought Dan in initially to talk to the Greater Milwaukee Committee because I'd taken a trip to Babson College with Shell Lubar, and this is really just a very exciting opportunity for Milwaukee. And I think that coming out of the first phase of the project, which Dan is setting up, will be about 6 months, we're really going to have a significant number of action items of how we can move the city forward.
Well, we are out of time, but I want to thank you once again for joining us and going over, covering a lot of ground with us this month. Mike Lovell, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, Mike Lovell, of course, is the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. You've been listening to the Chancellor's Report on WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Dave Edwards. Thanks for joining us.